The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There he is.
Oh, he's here.
Hello, welcome to Norwich.
I cannot believe I'm late for the fulfillment of my dream.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
Well, take your clothes off, Paddy, and sit down.
Not all of them.
Just enough.
Just a respectable amount.
Hello, everyone. This is Colin Schindler, along with John Holmes and Patrick Barclay, welcoming you back to another edition of Football Ruined My Life. Today, it's a very special podcast because, due to absolutely no public demand whatsoever, Paddy, Paul and I are taking the show on the road. John is joining us remotely, sitting in resplendent, if not glorious, isolation because the prospect of negotiating the road from where he lives to the furthest reaches of East Anglia is somewhat daunting. Anyway, for our very first such bold venture, we are in Norwich, home, of course, to the sports guru, Alan Partridge, but since we're at Carrow Road, also to today's unique guest. Well, in a way, of course, all our guests are unique, but I doubt that Martin O'Neill can make a pavlova like today's guest. I doubt that Andy Hamilton can make a scone or a Yorkshire pudding like her, and I'm quite certain that David Bernstein has never made a toad in the hole like today's guest. I'm talking, of course, about the most famous of the owners of Norwich City, Delia Smith. Delia, I think it might be true to say that the hallmark of your dishes is high-quality, classic simplicity. Would you be able to say the same about your stewardship of your beloved canaries?
Oh, I don't know.
That's a great answer.
I sort of hang on the coattails of something. I don't know. It's not that well organised, really.
But it seems from the outside, and Patrick will presumably back me up on this, that it's an actually extremely well-run club. Mm-hmm. We don't read stories of disasters and dysfunction about Norwich City. We feel it's well stewarded.
We hope it is. My husband had a business in London, and the way he ran the business was in a very relaxed way. Everybody absolutely adored him, and I've always wanted the football club to be the same. Mm. You know, everybody's relaxed, and we don't have any top-down leadership. We have collaborative leadership here, and we try to be a family.
What is most interesting is it wouldn't be unfair to say that in the Premier League era, Norwich have had something of a yo-yo existence. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, for all the ups and downs, particularly the downs, you've maintained a stability about it. You don't seem to get carried away with the promotions, and you don't seem to get too desperate about the relegations.
No, I think we've been carried away a bit a few times, but we've managed to overcome it, really, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm in a double love affair here in that...
No, Paddy, really, honestly.
Well, I've had a thing about Delia since I bought a book of hers in 1976, which, when we met a few minutes ago, made us both feel a little bit older. But also, why this is so special for me is that when I was a journalist for 40 years, and I always wondered, would I be a fan when I finished? And I thought, well, the two clubs that I'd like to be a fan, I used to love coming here to Carrow Road. Used to just love it. One of my favourite players, Delia, Ian Crook.
Oh, gosh.
Wasn't he beautiful? A lovely technique he had. And
wonderful.
He was in the Munich team, wasn't he? The
yes.
Bayern Munich.
Yes.
And Fulham was the other one. Well, since I live a short swim from Fulham, Fulham won my affections, but it's still great to be back here.
Delia, we always ask our guests, where did it start? How did it start? How long have you been supporting the team? What was your, do you remember your first game?
Yes, I do. I was brought up in a home where we had football on the television. I'd never been to a live match. Mm. And when I was young, in the 60s, Leeds United were on the television the whole time, you know. Yeah. And so we used to watch Leeds United at home. I loved it, and my mother loved it, and the dog used to run out into the garden frightened because my mother used to scream watching it. But I'd never been to a live match. I liked football, but I'd never been to a live match. And then I met Michael, my husband, and he took me to my first football match. My first football match was at Wembley.
Oh.
And it was something called a Home International.
Yes.
Do you remember
Home International? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The England winning World Cup team were playing Northern Ireland, and so I saw them, and I saw George Best in the same game. That's my first live football match.
And did you feel about George, over and above the fact he would have been the idol of every non-male?
Well, and a lot of males.
And some males. But did you see the beauty and the grace of the footballing hero immediately with George?
I did. I just thought, well, I just couldn't believe it, really. And it was wonderful to watch.
Can you remember the first Norwich match? Presumably with Michael.
So Michael took me to meet his parents.
Yeah.
And they lived in Harleston in Norfolk. And Michael's father was a vicar, the parish vicar there. Ah. And you could only get married on an away match. So Michael's father and Michael brought me to my first match here.
Yeah.
We went to the Maidshead for lunch with his mum. She went shopping, and we walked down the river and came to Carrow Road into the South Stand, which was all standing.
Mm.
And I just absolutely loved it.
How different really was it from your England experience at Wembley?
I think it was more exciting, really. Surrounded, you know, with all the supporters now, it was really good. So
you were an instant convert, in other words?
I was.
What you've explained, Delia, is Norwich City. I mean, the first time I went to Carrow Road was in 1963.
Oh, that's before me.
Leicester, and of course, we were playing Norwich in the sixth round of the Cup. Norwich, had 3 or 4 years previously, they'd had this amazing Cup run, which really started Norwich City off. Since then, they've been pretty much club that everybody knows about in the second division or the first division, or as they now name it, the Championship and the even better Championship, Premier League and so on. But until then, Norwich had a terrible time. They didn't feature as a football club until that great run. In 1959, they beat Manchester United, they beat Tottenham, and there was a chairman called Geoffrey Watling, I believe.
Yes.
And with the manager, Archie McCauley, they brought Norwich to a position they've never really fallen back from.
No, that's wonderful, isn't it? Yes. Mm. I remember Geoffrey very well. We bought our shares from him.
And so how long were you supporting the team before you and Michael, presumably as a joint decision, decided we can do something here, we could run it?
Well, no, we never thought that. But what happened was the finances of the club were slipping and slipping. The owner of the club was forced to sell players. Every week we watched another player go.
Mm.
And Chippy went to Ipswich. Oh, that's my lowest moment, I think.
Oh, no.
Particularly Ipswich, yes, I can see
Chippy. Ian Crook. And we just were really desperate about it and deeply upset,
yes,
as you would be, because we were a good team. And then we heard rumours of people starting, you know, what they do, consortiums and things like that. And we heard rumours. And then we got an invitation one day, would you like to come out to supper with the then chairman who was trying to save the club? And he just said, if we were willing to put $500,000 into the football club, he was asking. Michael was sitting beside me. He said, I could have a place on the board. I said, no. If we gave you $1 million, could we have two places on the board? Because my husband is the one who knows about football. I know nothing. And that's what happened.
Did you realise what you were letting yourself in for?
No. And so we went to board meetings, and for the initial time, all we did was talk about how to service debt. The club was on the board of bankruptcy. The staff could only have half a job, so you could work from Monday to Tuesday or Tuesday. They hadn't got the money. Mm. And the chief executive had to sign off anything above £5.
And how did you begin to turn it around? What did you do?
We sat on the board and we tried everything we could do. One day we thought that if you went to, there was a sort of package thing that Deloitte did, they would come in and look at your football club and tell you what to do and what not to do.
Mm.
They came in, and quite honestly, I mean, that was years and years ago, so I'm not trying to do them down. Mm. But they didn't have much to say. They said to me, you'll never make a success of the catering. So, like, that was that. But they said, you've got a lawyer on your board who's costing you $75,000 a year. You better get a rookie lawyer who's just qualified for about $30,000 a year, and that would save you a lot of money. Mm. And we did that. And then we just sat around, as I say, firefighting, trying to service debt. I said to the chief executive one day, would you consider, we've got this great big stadium that's only used once a fortnight. Mm. Can't we just use it and try and make some money, you know, out of these great big function rooms and things like that? And he said, yeah. And so we took the bull by the horns. We had a caterer there and gave him notice. And I got some friends I knew who were from catering to come and help me. And we started. And with money that Michael and I put in, we were able to refurbish some of the big rooms.
I would imagine that the fans were thrilled initially that you'd taken over. Or not the case? Because anybody who put money into the club was good and you were already well known.
Yeah, but if...
But yeah. Was there misogyny about then? Was that what...
No, I didn't get any of that. But I just think there was sort of, oh, well, you know, how long is it going to take before you get fed up with it? You know, it's just a toy.
Yeah.
People are always amazed, you know, 28 years later.
You're still here.
We're still here. And when we were doing rather badly, I remember one of the people in the press saying, oh, they're more concerned with buying hot plates than players. So you get all that.
So
we started as we meant to go on.
Did you ever feel that sort of a bit of the love had been torn away? Because, you know, you talked with great affection of the players. You loved the strip, the colours probably, and the players.
Oh, I loved the game.
The game. Yet you're going into it when you actually own the club, it's a different game. As you said,
we didn't own it then.
I beg your pardon, when you're running a club, it's a different game.
Yes.
And it always seems to me from outside that it's a thankless game. You would have known the late Bill Kenwright, who put his life into Everton Football Club and yet got nothing but earache from fans who said, OK, you've put 20 million in, why haven't you put 200 million in like the guy in Manchester?
Yeah. And look what happened. It was one of the best run, best football clubs. But then in comes a lot of money and down it goes.
Yeah. But did you ever feel, I went into this for love of the football club and am I getting back the love? You never had that problem?
No. I think the first time somebody came up to me face to face, eyeball to eyeball, and told me, you know, what a shambles. I think that first time might have been a shock. But after that, I used to do cheeky things, like there was a man sitting down in front of me and he'd say, and I said, why don't you come and have a drink? I think with a football club, I mean, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but I think you get 80% of people who really love the club. I think they all, the 100% love the club, but you always get like maybe 10 to 20% of whingers, and you just live with the whingers. It's part of it.
I think I'll bring John in at this point because he briefly shared the problems of being an owner of the club that he adored and had been so passionately involved with all this time. Do you empathise with what Delia is saying at the moment?
Of course. I always said the best thing to be at a football club is actually a supporter, because you can walk away. You can go home on a Saturday night and they've lost 3-0 at home and you feel pretty rotten. And my wife, who doesn't go at all, I've never been to a game, she'll look at me and say, They lost then, and half an hour later, I'd get over it. And, of course, I'd go the next week. But if you're chairman, if you're involved, it goes on a week, doesn't it? It's relentless. The manager always wants two new players, the box holders, and especially in your case, they used to come to me and complain about the food. God knows what they said to you if the food isn't right.
Yeah, we've had our fair share of that. But picking up on what you said, when we became board directors, we kept our season tickets and we've still got them. Because we both said to each other, look, if we don't like it, we want to go back and sit with our mates, And so we've still got the season tickets, and luckily, you know, people in great need are using them. Mm. So that was very nice. Mm. But I would say of myself, and I'd say it of Michael too, I've never stopped being a supporter, and I can empathise with supporters.
Well, John's got a very interesting philosophy about supporters running the club, which is that he's... I'm speaking for you, John. Is that all right?
Of course, Colin. I'm interested to what you're going
to say. Well, John, if he were only here today, would say that you can get to a situation where support... Now I've actually forgotten what I was going to say. You've ruined it.
John, can you play the part of Colin Schindler playing the part of you?
I think what you're going to say is that I always encourage my kids, Stevie, to shout out, get your money out.
Yes.
To the chairman, so that I could resign, you see. We had a really successful period. I was chairman for about 6 months. We lost one game and we got promoted. And I thought, this is the time to go and go back.
Yeah.
What I think is sad in a lot of cases is where, you know, the Bill Kenwright story is tragic. I knew Bill. You would have known Bill.
I did.
Everton was his life. You end up with a situation where the police are saying, you can't come to the game. That's desperate.
It is.
To me, the football club is really a major part of my life. It's in my DNA. Ever since, you know, the age of seven, Saturdays have been about going to the football and the connection with my father and my grandfathers, all of whom were supporters.
How lovely.
Is such that it's a dominant factor in my life and the kids as well. Well, my son has. The girls aren't supporters, but never mind. I saw so many directors, and when it went wrong or they had to go, they ceased to be supporters.
I know.
And I always felt it was really sad.
I think so too.
That they'd lost something in their life.
But John's other point, he said, that now having remembered what he wanted to say, was that you actually need, it's a good idea not to have supporters running the club because they all get passionate and involved and emotional. And if you have outside investors whose only interest is the value of their investment they've made, if you like, then they might actually have more objective ways of looking at the situation. Am I right in saying that, John? Because that you did have certain things.
I think what I'm saying is there needs to be a mixture.
Yes.
I do think the board need to have people who are supporters, because as Delia said, it's very important to have people who care about the club and who feel like the supporters do and have a sense of the heritage of the club.
Definitely.
On the other hand, you do need people who say to you, listen, I know so-and-so was a good player, or I know we've always done that, but it's not necessarily the right thing to do that. You know, it's the old thing from the leopard. In order for things to stay the same, change is necessary. And I think that way you get the supporters' angle. Most supporters are pretty conservative. They want things to stay how they are. But if you've got outside influence as well, they can bring objectivity. Is that fair, dear?
I think that is fair. But I would like to say, to speak up for Norwich supporters, because I do think we're in a unique position here. I mean, if you're going to Everton, you have a choice of other clubs. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of what I call floating voters.
Yes.
But in Norwich, you don't have that. And I don't think our football supporters would ever behave like they did there to Bill. Mm. I don't think that would happen here. We've had little demonstrations and we've had language and we've had, you know, we get our fair share.
The thing I remember, were you relegated to the third tier about 20 years ago? Are you, anyway,
mixing us up with Manchester City, I think.
No.
Well, it was then the second tier.
And Norwich went down, and I'm an attendance freak. I look at the attendances in the newspapers before I look at the scores. And Norwich went down. On the day they went down, they had a home match and the crowd was 24,500. Those same 24,500 went to every, because I used to look at crowds in the lower division, those same 24,000 bumps were on the same 24,000 seats every single home match, even though they'd been relegated.
Same now. So the last time we went to the first division, exactly the same thing happened. We sold the same season tickets. Yeah. I do think Norwich supporters are, I did once say, you're the best in the world, and they are.
Was that in the same, was that in your most famous footballing
yes,
speech?
Yes, it was.
Which was against Manchester City on the pitch.
Which is the elephant in the room when we're with you, because we're waiting, we're gagging to get on to it.
Yeah.
We did talk about this on the train coming up. I said, I'm not bringing it up.
But you can.
Both of us thought, good on you.
I can't tell you. I had letters from football supporters from one end of the country to the other saying, oh, if only we had a board director.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah. I can believe that.
Was that rehearsed or did it come into
No. Let me just tell you the whole story of it.
Right.
I am sort of quite impulsive. Mm. I'm not sure that's a bad thing always. I mean, sometimes you've got to act quickly. But what happened was the game before we'd played Middlesbrough. And we were doing really badly. And the crowd suddenly got behind the team. And they really got behind the team. And so we ended up with a draw when we were absolutely done for. Mm. The crowd changed what happened, the 12th man. So next time I'm watching this Man City game and it's still, you know, pretty awful. And then what I thought I'd do is I'd run down at halftime and get them to put something, you know, on the
perimeter.
A message. Mm. And they said, no, there isn't time to do that. And somebody's standing next to me with a microphone and says, just say it. And what I forgot, and you do forget, because there's always cameras, that Sky was here. So I thought it was just me, you know, and the supporters. But I can tell you right now that if the supporters get behind the team, it makes a huge difference. Mm, and I've spoken to players about it.
And there was a big improvement at halftime, wasn't there, in that match?
No, I don't think so. I think No, they didn't really hear. We've never had a really good sound system for years and years. Oh. So I don't think they really heard exactly. But it was so funny because one of the football journalists said, I should be brought before the FA to a disciplinary.
On what charge, precisely?
Well, you know, behaviour.
Encouraging your own supporters.
Yeah. And so for a week, I was in the doghouse, you know. Everyone's looking at the floor, clicking their pens, you know. And then suddenly, you know, all the supporters were sending in these letters. Suddenly it turned round and suddenly it became a good thing.
Can you remember who the journalist was?
It was Patrick Barkley. We all know who it was.
It wasn't you, Paddy.
Oh, good.
But you must be very proud, I think, to be part of a community.
Yes, I do think we go to an awful lot of effort to be there in the community. And the Football Foundation is second to none. I think it's the best. We are, you know, very, very central to Norfolk life and Norfolk people.
My grandfather used to run, you know, an immigrant from what is now the Ukraine, but he ended up in Bury, which is just north of Manchester, running a football factory. He had no interest in football at all, but he was desperate for Bury to win because his philosophy was such, you know, it was based on figures, clearly, was that the workers worked better, were more productive on Monday morning if Bury had won than if Bury had lost.
Yeah, I think you can go into a football club on a Monday morning. I work here as well. And you do have a much better atmosphere when you've won. Mm. And then if you've had a few losses in a row, then there is definitely a cloud, you know.
Well, then it brings me to the next point. Again, a bit of an elephant, but not a large one. Inevitably, in the position that you hold, you have to deal with managers, and when managers are, inverted commas, under pressure, it's you that has to make decisions. Mm-hmm. Can you say something about the pressures that are on you to make those decisions when clearly the public is putting that pressure on you to wind up with a messiah from somewhere God only knows where? You know.
Yes, it is obviously a very painful experience when a manager goes. I always get fond of managers, and I do of players as well. It always is very, very upsetting. But I think there can be a tendency in football to not give people time. So for me, I would always want them to have as much time as they can have. Apart from that, I mean, it's terribly expensive. So we appointed a sporting director 5-6 years ago, and that has made a huge difference.
Positively,
a huge, huge. What can board directors do? You know, what happens is the manager is like the god, and everybody has to do at the. But when you have a sporting director, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
Dare I say it? I think that's helped an awful lot. But I do think, going back to this team, community thing, you know with the supporters when the manager isn't right, you know, you know. There's some way that everybody kind of comes to it at a certain point.
Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, I can see Norwich supporters being very fond of you for all sorts of reasons.
Yes.
Because you are one of them, but you're also invested in where they're invested, and you have a celebrity that, that kind of distinguishes you from any other owner. And that is kind of my point. Football has become the property of people not like you at all. They've become nation states funded by oil reserves or hedge fund managers from America looking at you. You are dealing with a lot of very different kinds of owners. Is there still hope for us to have, as owners, people like you, or are we committed to the inevitability of nation states and hedge fund managers?
I just hope there is. I really sincerely hope there is. And we will do, Michael and myself, we'll do everything we can to keep that ethos of this club when we're not going to be here anymore. And we will make sure that whoever is here will pick up on that. Because actually, there's money swirling around, isn't it? I call it the money go-round. But I don't understand how people come with hedge funds and how it's not their money, it's other money, and it's going round, and it's doing this, that and the other. And the person who's bringing the money is choosing the manager and the players. It is pretty much of a shambles in some cases. But what gives me hope is Luton. You know, that is just a Cinderella story, isn't it?
It is, yes.
And okay, they might go down again, but that's what gives me hope. When we came here, you brought through youth players, you sold them on, and that's what paid for the football. That's what paid for the football, and that was how the football went.
Yeah.
Well, that's still happening here, really. We're not able to go into the market like other clubs are, so we put all our energies into young players and our academy. We have the most amazing academy.
Dealey, you'd probably think, I mean, I've not heard you speak publicly about this, but obviously one of the most encouraging things in football in the last 3 or 4 years was when the Super League was proposed.
Yes.
And the big clubs all charged in. As a result of their own supporters, they charged straight back out again very quickly.
Wasn't
and
that amazing?
They couldn't, their detachment from their own supporters was such, they were astonished. Why don't these people want us to win everything and have no chance of losing? Which is basically what they were saying. And the encouraging thing was that it was one time the supporters really got together and their voice was heard. It is about, for me, it's about communities, because their football club is their life. It is what they are, what their family was and everything else.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's something else going on there which is very moving. And that is what happens when people do get together, when people are community. The fat cats with all the money have no power at all. I wish we could get politics like that.
Yeah.
Has society changed to an extent that the philosophy that we are espousing and you particularly are striving towards has been outdated by social events that we don't have any control over?
But that was the refreshing thing that happened that John's alluding to, because there is power in people and there is power in people in unity. And, you know, we have competitors, obviously, in football. With us, it's Ipswich and Norwich. And all of that that's going on is on the surface. But down below, when push comes to shove, I think all football supporters are glued together.
Yes.
I think all football supporters understand one another. Your football club is Fulham.
Yes.
One of the best experiences I've had is going to Fulham. We never win. We never, ever win at Fulham.
Really?
But there's this amazing pub called the Crab.
The Crab Tree?
Yeah, the Crab Tree.
Yes, on the river, near
the
River
Cafe.
Yeah,
on the river, and it's big, great big pub. Mm. Going into there after a match that we've lost, that is 50% Norwich and 50% Fulham, and everybody's having a ball.
Absolutely.
And all the Fulham supporters are coming up to me saying, can I get you a drink, Delia? You know, I mean, that is football.
Yes, you're right. Unity is strength.
It is, it is. And we do have lots of trouble with football supporters, but I think it's all on the surface.
When it's something serious,
yeah,
they get together.
Reverting slightly to your other minor interest, I know this is a rather highfalutin concept, but you've learnt so much, not only about cooking, but about the impact of cooking on people, and you have your viewers and people who buy books like Paddy Barclay.
Mm-hmm. And have been doing for,
and have been doing for a long time, absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, is there any overlap? In both cases, you have to appeal to the public,
yes,
one way or another. Did you learn anything from your career in cooking that helped you in your career in football directorship?
Well, only that we're here to serve. You know, we're here to serve, all of us, whatever we do. And that all I was doing was serving the public. I was trying to take the fear out of cooking.
Mm.
That was all it was. It was just taking the fear. You can do it only if somebody shows you.
Mm.
You can't do it if somebody doesn't show you. Mm. So it was quite straightforward what I wanted to try and achieve. With football, Michael and I have always had the attitude, we're here to serve the supporters.
Mm.
We're here to act on their behalf, to serve them in any way we can serve them. And that's what we've tried to do. You know, we might have failed many times, we might have made many mistakes, everybody does, but that is what we've tried to do, is serve the people. And I think that people know that.
Yeah, but you never get people coming up to you and saying, here, Delia, that pavlova you told us about, it's rubbish. I tried it, it didn't work.
I had that all the time.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
I had letters of complaint.
It's worth a while just telling our audience, within the business of cookery, you started from very humble beginnings indeed, didn't you? Can you tell us about that?
Well, just awful at school. I failed my 11 plus, which was like the worst thing that could happen to you. My headmistress said to me, her parting shot when I left was, if you'd have worked harder, you could have been a secretary.
Ah, yes.
Then, and it's a long, 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 long time ago, that was the best thing a girl could be.
Yep.
That was high, up above.
Yes.
And this is post-war Britain we're talking about, isn't
it? If you could be a nurse or a shop girl, but if you were clever, you could become somebody's secretary, and that was like amazing.
And serve a man.
And the misogyny in football, which we all know about and regret, but they must have been there too in the
that
beginning.
That hasn't
of your...
affected me one jot.
That's great.
No, it's never affected me. And people say, oh, how does it feel, you know, being...
You never went to Notts County when Derek played.
It might be there. It might be there, but it's passed me by.
What do you think you've learnt? I mean, I know how much you've given to football and given to Norwich. What do you feel that you've learnt from the game and from being in the position that you've been in? What's the game given to you?
An enormous amount of pleasure. It's a beautiful game. It always will be. It always is. And apart from all the funny things that go on around it,
yes,
and all its problems, like John, there's still nothing like Saturdays. When you get relegated, it's a horrible experience, but we all get up and go to football on a Saturday.
Mm.
And that's the thing we do. Whatever division we're in, that's what we do, and we love it. I've met some lovely people going round to away matches. I've met board directors, chairmen, people in football, lovely people in football. It's a wonderful community, and there are wonderful people in it.
Do you remember the Bayern Munich match? Well, of course you do. What a silly question.
When Michael launched his publishing company, he was publishing a very beautiful food magazine sponsored by Sainsbury's, and it got shortlisted for the magazine artwork of the year. And we were invited to a dinner at Grosvenor House, which we had to go to for the sake of all our staff, same night as the Bayern Munich
match.
No! The second leg, the one in...
Yeah, the one in Munich.
Where you won it.
Yeah, we went to the one at home.
Yeah.
So we were able to record the television.
Mm.
we went to the dinner and we won it.
Double triumph.
And there was champagne everywhere and we were drinking champagne. And then we went home and we put on the television. And all I can remember is the two of us jumping up and down on the bed with a bottle of champagne each, going, fabulous. Oh, my God!
Fabulous story. There's not a single Oscar winner in history who's managed to go home and watch his team win a European match in that way.
Yeah.
No.
You've beaten a lot of them.
It was unbelievable, yeah. And there's a whole group of people. There's a group of people here. They're having a reunion in here in a couple of weeks called the I Was There group.
Oh, yeah.
And they were all there, and we weren't.
And you weren't.
Well, that's odd because one of the future topics is going to be I Wish I'd Seen,
which is kind of
the reverse of I Was
we,
There.
We know what your answer for that is going to be. Yeah, you but and Michael, yeah.
Which of the grounds that you've been to as a director have you enjoyed the most?
I think my first away match ever. I'd been to several home matches with Michael in the beginning, but my first away match I ever went to was Tottenham. And I've always had a soft spot for Tottenham. Mm. We always used to get players from Tottenham on loan here as well. So I still got a soft spot for Tottenham.
Did Martin Peters come here from Spurs? He certainly came here.
Yeah. But more recently, Culverhouse, Bowen.
Yeah.
And of course, Ian Crook began his career as understudy to Glenn Hoddle, who he so resembled in playing style.
We got a manager, of course, who came to us from Norwich, who did it sensationally well. That's Martin O'Neill.
He was one of the best.
One of our most successful managers, very charismatic. And, of course, he had a short, very short reign at Norwich.
Yes.
Because he fell out with the chairman, Robert Chase.
Yeah, he did.
Was Robert a supporter? His relationship with the club and the supporters was not like yours in any sense, was it?
No, it wasn't. And, you know, the money ran out. But Martin O'Neill, I heard a radio programme about him and somebody told him, you mustn't go to Norwich, you'll never get on with that chairman. And he took no notice of them and he said, I've got to Norwich. And yeah, they were right. I didn't get on with the chairman. But he's one of the greats.
Do you have I suppose you probably don't want to say, but do you have some all-time favourite Norwich players?
Yes, I have one. Dale Gordon.
Yes.
He was called Disco Dale. He would take the ball all the way down the wing and not pass it and score.
Yeah.
Well, I just love that.
Scoring is the key thing. I mean, not passing is not necessarily...
I know, but usually wingers, their job is to take it.
Yeah.
Not him. No, he would just go down and then in it goes.
Well, on the basis of the favourite player, I mean, you may already have answered this question because it may be jumping up and down on the bed with the bottles of champagne, but is there a match that you saw that's your favourite match that you always go back to in times of trouble and you remember what it was like? This was the moment me at my happiest with Norwich City.
I suppose really probably winning the playoffs at Wembley in my time. I'd seen Norwich play at Wembley years ago, but seeing them win the playoffs, I think, was a very,
and
very
I suppose
special.
Looking down at the bank
of
40,000. That's a bit of actuality for the... It just proves we're on location, doesn't it?
Yeah, all your listeners know now. You know, it's not kidding. You're really here.
We are here at the occasion of Watford's visit to Carrow Road to play Norwich City later tonight. And that's why we are going to go, because there's such a thing as a football match about to take place here. But I want to say on behalf of John the Baptist, I mean, John, not John the Baptist, in the Midlands, and on Paddy Barclay.
Just begin with a B, by the way.
And our indefatigable producer, Paul Kobrak. This is Colin Shinter saying thank you to Delia Smith for everything you've done for us today. We've hugely enjoyed ourselves. This has been the first of our visits on the road to different locations. Mm. I think there may well be more to come. We are always interested in the suggestions that our dedicated listeners are inclined to tell us, and we look forward to receiving them. You can tell us by writing to footballruinedmylife@gmail.com. But until that moment, it's thanks to all you who are listening now, and we'll see you all next time on Football Ruined My Life. Cheerio!
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Did I get everything in?
I think so. Yeah.
I remember David Bernstein telling me that if he could have chosen how to go up, he would always choose to go to Wembley. The trouble is you can't guarantee the result, but obviously being automatically promoted is boring compared to winning the playoffs at Wembley.
No, it isn't.